Ecclesiastes, and we've been trying to understand what somebody who's older, who actually understood things, says about life. And again, some of you will hear it, and it won't make any difference in your life, because that's what you're used to. You're used to hearing things that don't make a difference until God forces them to make a difference. And when he forces them to make a difference, sometimes that's too late, because now you're already in a situation that you could have avoided. Wise people will listen to those who have gone before them and say, okay, they learned a lesson, and I'm not going to participate in something they said not to. Why? Because it doesn't work. And especially in the Bible, because you'll find out 100% of the time whatever the Bible warns you about is going to be true. And so you want to avoid those things. I understand that some of you are playing with an app on your phone that's Pokemon, so I want to talk to you about that. First and foremost, I don't want it around camp. And I'll tell you right at the front, I think it's of Satan and evil, and don't touch it around here. And I'll tell you why. Many years ago, I'm going to read this to you. This is from Mike Dawson, who is a missionary in the jungles of South America. And there's a guy down there who just died. His name is Shoefoot, that's what we call him. And he worshiped Satan at one point. Let me read what he said. I'm going to read. These are words from Mike, not from me. Years ago, a missionary friend of mine, that's my daughter. As missionaries working with the Yanomamo, I'm constantly reminded that when it comes to spiritual matters, I'm not the expert. Shoefoot, I don't know how to pronounce that, was an ex-witch doctor. He accepted the gospel of Jesus Christ many years ago when my parents first started working with the tribe back in the early 50s. Although still a young man, when they arrived at the village, he was a witch doctor of considerable fame. He had already attained the highest level of, I can't pronounce that word, it's some kind of evil. Or the English translation is child eater. So he achieved the status of child eater. Because he could attack other villages in the spirit world, stealing the souls of the child there and causing the child to die. These souls were given to the many cannibal spirits who were his accomplices in murder. The soul would then be eaten by these demon cannibal spirits. Although having attained the highest he could go by his own admission, he was being overwhelmed by the bondage he was under even before he heard about the saving power of the gospel. So once he clearly understood that Christ was the only way to be freed from the bondage, he accepted Christ's claim on his life, and his life has never been the same. One of the times I was reminded of how much more the expert he is in spiritual matters happened one day a couple years ago. We had been in the jungle many long weeks with no mail from home, and a plane landed bringing us a package. I was excited as I looked. I took it home. Look, on a package from Wakanda Free Church. I gave her the package. She opened it up. She was as excited as I was. Enclosed was a book. Now that in itself was a big enough disappointment, because I wanted some real mail, like maybe a box of chocolates or something. But when I saw the cover, I was even more disappointed. It was a book on Pokemon cartoon characters. I'm an old school cartoon, Bugs Bunny, Roadrunner, and their friends, and really don't get into any of the new ones, especially the ones that look as ugly as these did. Then we noticed there was also a letter enclosed with the book, and we read it together. Dear Mike, it said, it seems our church is having a discussion about Pokemon, with the church divided about this toy, so they were sending this book of all Pokemon characters to me, asking me to have Shoefoot look at it and see what he thought about the characters. Well, that was more interesting than just having a book of ugly cartoons for the boys, but to be honest, this was pretty low priority for me. As a matter of fact, Kayla had been asking me for weeks to watch a videotape of these same cartoons that our son Stephen really liked. She claimed his attitude really changed after watching these cartoons. I told her I would really plan on watching it with him, but we're extremely busy in the jungle, and I hadn't had a chance yet. But to be honest, I did not place much importance on the book. But one day, when I was talking with Shoefoot, Kayla remembered the book and ran upstairs and got it. She handed the book to me. Opening the book at random, showing him pictures, I asked, "What do you think of this?" He looked at it and said, Oh, I know this one. He suddenly had my attention. He went on this, oh, this is a nasty little jecula, demon. It is always underfoot, bites, scratches, screeches, and whatnot. I looked at the page, and on the list of attributes, it said bites, scratches, and screeches, and claws. And I forgot what else, but it was if Shoefoot was reading the page and he doesn't read or speak one word of English. I figured that first one could have been a lucky guess, so I flipped the page, another picture, and asked him about that one, and again he told me exactly what its attributes were. He did this over and over. So he made a believer out of me. At that time, Kayla ran upstairs, called Stephen. He came down reluctantly, not wanting to hear anything, and determined not to allow anyone to do anything to his cartoon tape. He frowned slowly, disappeared, as he listened to Shoefoot describe the attributes of each cartoon that he knew. By the time he was finished, Stephen went upstairs, brought his tape down, and he and Kayla destroyed it. So he made a believer out of Stephen as well. There were some he did not recognize, and he said, there are so many demons, it's impossible for any one person to know them all. Then he added, tell the people from your churches, you. Tell the people from your churches that if there are things that make them feel uncomfortable, it's probably not good. God's Spirit will speak to them about what's right and wrong. Your people need to learn to listen. Talking to Shoefoot, even when he was here, those are the demons, those little Pokemans are the demons that they give to children, the demons that work with children. Don't get comfortable with these things. Satan is very, very sneaky at what he does. He doesn't care how he grabs you. But if you've been playing with it, here's probably what happens. You think about it, you want to get back to it, you want to play it, because that's how Satan works. He works through getting you. And you need to be very careful. You might say, well, that's just interesting. Well, here's another interesting thing. Here's the guy who created the program, the Pokemon program. Pokemon is essentially the correct answer. He was being interviewed by Time Magazine. Said Pokemon is essentially the correct answer toward life, not Christianity. Everything presented in the game is opposite of what Christians may believe. He intentionally is working at getting us to think differently. And if you don't think Satan can do that, he can. Some have said the game promotes voodoo or magic, and I agree in the sense that there are many things that occur in nature that are unexplainable. Furthermore, the violence in the game is unparalleled. It may not show up in the actual graphics, but the brutality is made especially explicit in the whatever entries. Nature, again, played a big role. You can read his whole interview. Just type it in and find it in Time Magazine. He basically started Pokemon just because his parents were Christians and he was anti-Christian and he wanted to do something that was totally opposite. All right, enough. That's not what my agenda was today. I want to get into Ecclesiastes. However, I thought, well, this fits. You got a guy in the jungle, an older guy, he's my age. He's been in the jungle, he has seen people who actually worship Satan and know Satan. And they have warned us. They've said, don't play with this. Why? Because it's satanic. You do what you want with that. But I would stay away from it. Back to Ecclesiastes. We're in Ecclesiastes 4. And the teacher goes on and he says something very important to understand again, as he does all along. He says, and though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him, a threefold cord is not quickly broken. If you remember, everything that we've talked about that's really important in life is relational. Your relationship with God is critical. Your relationship with one another, critical. These are not things that are minor. These are critical things. Now, what Satan does and what we do apart from God is get isolated. That's what we do. Isolation is of the evil one, not of God. In fact, we're told right at the beginning of the garden that it isn't good for man to be alone. And it isn't. Some people just put that with men, he needs to be married. It isn't good for man to be alone. I don't know how many young men have come to me and said, well, I'm going to do this, I'm going to live alone. I said, don't live alone. Why? It's not good for you to be alone. Well, I want to have my independence. No, what happens is you want to be an idiot. You want to think you're alone by yourself. You can do things that you wouldn't do with anybody else. You should be with somebody so you have some accountability. That's the way life goes. When you're all alone all the time, you think you're alone, but really you're not alone. So that's a deceptive thing of Satan, because you're never really alone, because God's there and all the angels are there. So you're never alone. So don't act alone. A lot of people think that they have accountability partners, that kind of thing, but they don't, because they really don't live with them, and they really only see them on occasions where they get together, and on those occasions they can pretend that they are whoever they want to be. And believe me, if you're gonna be somebody that says, I want to be held accountable, and you meet with me for 1 hour a week over coffee, I'm not holding you accountable. I can't watch your life. I don't know what you're doing, and you can portray anything you want to me during that hour. The only way to have accountability in this life is to do life with somebody. That's why when I got married, that was probably one of the greatest accountability partners you can have in life. Why? Because you do life. They know what you're doing. They know what you're saying. They know where you're going. They know, you know, if you were to ask Linda where I am right now, she would know. You say, well, it's pretty obvious. You're up here and you're doing this. Right. But if you ask her in the middle of the afternoon, she would know. If you would ask her, you know, except for when I sneak out in the woods and I check the berry patches, then she might not know where I am. However, we even discussed that yesterday, that she wants me to write what berry patch I'm inspecting in case I'm lost and she can't find me. See, there's something about accountability that's very important to have. You and I were never made to be alone. And what's going on in our culture right now is that with all the technology and everything that's going on in America, it looks like you're well connected and well bonded, but you're more alone than you've ever been before. People live right next door to each other, and they're more alone than they were ever before. They live in apartment complexes and duplexes and condos, and they don't know anybody around them. They're all alone. I was talking to a guy, we were talking about, he works in a church as a counselor, and he also works with resettling refugees that come to the United States with a Christian mission. So he works with that group, and from all over the world. And he says what's astounding is that most of them, as they get in the United States and they find it, they get them a place to live, they hate this place. They want to go back to where they were. And I said, why? Oh, we can take care of the housing and the food and the... But they're all lonely. They said, the people in the United States are all to themselves. We used to have problems, but we at least did it together. We used to have people that would bond and be together, and you'd all sit there and starve. You'd all sit there. You had this journey to go on, and this bonding, and this fellowship, this friendship was important. Come here, and I don't know anybody. I go in the backyard and say hi, and they walk the other way. And he recounted a time where one of the resettlement people I can't remember if it was an uncle or dad or husband, wife. One of them was dying, very serious cancer, and they were dying, and he went over and just spent a couple hours with them and just sitting with them. And towards the end of it, he said, so, you know, just generally, I'm wondering, I know this, I mean, it's good you're here, we can do the best we can to take care of your relative, but your experience in the States has been what? I mean, have you had some really good ones besides? And he looked at him and said, this last 2 hours has been the best since I've been here in the United States. He goes, why? Because somebody came and talked to me. You weren't meant to be alone. See, somehow in our country, we keep getting fooled. You think because you got a phone and Facebook that you're connected. Or whatever you guys use. Facebook, I know, is for old people, but whatever you use. We think that because we can go online and do whatever, we're connected to the world. You're not connected, you have information. Information doesn't connect people. It's just information. It's totally void of anything. It's just here's the information. Because you know the statistics about Michael Jordan doesn't make you his friend. Because you know that what Dwayne Wade or whatever signed with Chicago Bulls doesn't make you somebody who is, you know, knowing the Dwayne Wade and the Chicago Bulls. See, information, if you start passing off information as relational, you're going to be really lost. Because information in and of itself is information. It isn't relationship. Relationships have all kinds of other dynamics attached to them. And that's what you were made to have in life. You weren't made to have information. You were made to have relationships. And one of the greatest coups that Satan maybe ever played was the idea of transferring and making us think that information was relational, when information isn't. So you got a lot of really, really smart people who know everything about everything that are very lonely, because the information doesn't give them what they need. Well, I'm not saying information isn't fun. I'm a learner, and some of you in your strength finders, you're a learner. I'm a learner. I like information. I like learning all kinds of things I don't even need to know. No, I actually listen to public radio once in a while because they say things that are totally unimportant and about things that I somehow need to know, I guess. But that doesn't give me any relationships. You see, although a man might prevail, even though there's struggles out there and there's stuff, what happens in life is that you need somebody else in your life that is actually, not just somebody you chill with, see, that doesn't work, somebody you do life with. Growing up here at camp, I had some very good friends. Ron Elworth was one of my very good friends, and Wally Zybell was one of my very good friends, and we formed kind of a coalition. Not really, but I look back on it. We held each other to a very high standard. We didn't even mean to do it, I don't think. But we did. We expected each other to love God, read the Bible, be a part of stuff here, work hard. We held each other to the standards. I look back on those times in life and I think, you know what? God was very kind to me in providing people that were a part of life and did life with me. Because regardless of what you think, the people that you do life with are going to affect your decisions and your thought processes and etc. Most Americans today are not doing life with other people. They're doing life with media, television, whatever it is, or movies. They have far much more life with the pretend world than the real world. Now that's what's scary, because Satan is the ruler of the pretend world. God is the ruler of the real world. And when you have a group of people that understand pretend better than reality, you got trouble. They will have a very high suicide rate. Oh, we do. They will have a lot of addiction problems, because you're made to bond, and if you're not bonding with people, you're going to bond with something else. Oh, we do. You're going to have an abusive society, because people are going to be looking for fulfillment and significance in anything other than the way they were created. Oh, we do have an abusive society. It's really important that you surround yourself with people who are at least dedicated to the process of knowing God and loving Him. Who can talk to you and say, you shouldn't be doing this. Why are you doing this? You know, you should have good friends around you that help you see God. I mentioned, Ron, we were friends from youth group. We were friends from being up here every summer. He was part of our original year-round staff when we moved up here, and we were teachers, and he's a pastor now in Phoenix. And when we were younger, he and I spent hours and hours together. I mean, we were 4 years roommates in college, got our master's at the same place, drove the same car, got it. Just was convenient to do. We could finish each other's sentences. We were good friends. He's totally opposite of I am. He was a straight-A student. I was a football player. He did everything different than me. He had this really, really interesting knack of getting into trouble and making it look like I did it. And he's very good at different things. But one of the things he did was him and I would be talking about something, and all of a sudden he'd always get up in the middle of it and leave. Say, I gotta go to the bathroom or something. He went, get over here. I'm in the middle of yelling at you. Man, just excuse me. And one time he did and came back and said, I'm tired of you getting up and leaving when I'm yelling at you. And he goes, you know why I do that, Dave? I said, why? Because here's what happens. I tell you something, you get mad, your first thought stinks. Your second thought is usually pretty good, so I leave until you get your second thought. Oh. Well, how nice. Some of you have heard me say, if I've counseled you and you're having trouble because you spout off too quickly, I say, why don't you just start with your second thought? See, that's where it comes from. Isn't it nice to have a friend that doesn't say, I'm not going to hang out with you, I'm just going to figure out how to communicate with you. I'm not going to abandon you, I'm going to figure out how to make you the best you can be. You see, that's a strand. That's two. You get another strand. Some people like playing with it and say, you know, God and the Holy Spirit could be the third strand. That could be, I don't know. I'm just saying that in life, you were meant to be bonded. You were meant to be connected. And I promise you this today. You are bonded and connected to something. And if your life is disappointing right now, it's because you're bonded and connected to something that doesn't matter. But you are bonded. Because you're made to be bonded. You are connected because you are made to be connected. But if you look at what God said, you are made to be connected to Him, and you are made to be connected to one another, but you are not made to be connected to money, to sex, to violence, to yourself. You are not meant to be bonded to these other things. And if you are, the fruit of that is loneliness and despair and hopelessness. And that's how you can tell you're bonded to the wrong thing, because you see the fruit of it. And the fruit of it is what you're looking at. And that's why, if you're walking with God, you love God, you have two or three very solid friends who can confront you and talk to you, it's hard to get off course because you've got people around you all the time pushing you on course. They're pushing you into the place you need to be. When I was younger and playing football, sometimes you had a more experienced guy with you. And I was always on the defensive line. And once in a while, a guy behind me, a linebacker, knew that I was out of place. And all of a sudden, I felt this big old hairy arm pushing me. What was he doing? Get in that gap. You're in the wrong spot. He didn't say anything. He just pushed me over. And immediately, when I felt that push, I knew, oops, made a mistake. Got to get over here. Why? To somebody else, the court of three said, get over there. We got to cover the whole thing and you're in the wrong spot. You think about it, the way God designed us, He designed us to love Him and walk with Him and be intimate with Him. So if you're not doing that, you're not doing anything, because that's step one. And then to each other, we want to make each other successful. And that's where we become the cords together, because what we're doing is looking at each other and trying to figure out, how can I make this person successful? What I love doing, and many of you know I do this, I'll do this with you individually if I talk to you, I'll do this with our staff. I keep trying to figure out what you really like, what you're good at, and getting you into it. Why? Because that's what I do. That's what we all do. Because as we bond, see, at church is not a place you go stand up, sit down, sing a few songs. It's a church you go with people you're bonded to, that you're connected to. And that connection and that bonding is what holds you. And in fact, if you're not doing what you should in church, the church will say, stop it. See, that's the bonding, the connection. If the church doesn't say, stop it, they're not really a church. You're not really bonded there. You're not really connected there. You're not a strand with them. See, the church needs to do this. The church needs to say, quit sinning. Quit doing that. And you need to not say, well, quit judging me. Nobody's judging you when you're out there doing something stupid. You're doing something stupid. And the church needs to be able to say you're doing something stupid. Your friends need to be able to say it. If somebody is your friend and they can't come and tell you got bad breath, you got a problem. They're not your friend in the first place, and you aren't welcoming real information. But we don't do that because we're too busy making sure nobody gets upset with us. It's all right if people get upset with you. We get upset with a lot of things. If all your friends in life you're never going to be upset with, then you put a standard that can't even be met there. We're people. We're going to misunderstand each other once in a while. We're going to be upset with one another once in a while. We're going to not want to talk to one another once in a while. We're going to look at somebody and go the other way once in a while. We're going to do that. It shouldn't stay that way. But you got to let people be people. You know, man might prevail against one who is alone. And Satan, I'm telling you, he prevails real, real good against one who's alone. Two will withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. Love the symbol of three here, and if you've been around, you hear me encourage you all the time. I encourage you in your life, you should have a strand of three. You should have three. Yourself being in the middle, and then you should have somebody younger in your life. Somebody younger that you're pouring into. You just pour into them. You should have somebody younger, same gender, and you should have somebody younger that you're saying, I want this person to be successful. And in a different season of life. So, like if you're in high school, you should have somebody in junior high. If you're in college, you should have somebody in high school. If you're out of college, maybe you have somebody in college. If you're like me, you could have half the world because you're old. So, you basically are looking for somebody younger to pour into. And your mind frame is, I want to pour into this person. See, and then you also have somebody in your life that's in the next season of life older than you. If you don't have those connections in your life, you will not be healthy. Or if you try and manipulate those connections, you will not be healthy. See, when you're looking to the younger one to help, you're adjusting your life so that they could follow you. When you're looking to the older one, you're asking them to examine your life so that you could follow God. And you're an open book. I tell you, if you do that, what happens eventually, you usually end up with two or three younger ones and two or three older ones, and you end up, because all of a sudden, you're not really afraid to be with people or what they say or how they about, you're not afraid of that. You know, one of the greatest things in life, actually, is to be able to be an open book for people. When you're an open book, you have nothing to hide. They have nothing to beat you up with. See, we're all sinful people. That doesn't surprise anybody. God says it. We all know it. So when someone says you're a sinner, you go, no kidding. So what else are you going to get me with? I found that true here through the years, being a nonprofit with people giving us money, that kind of thing. You want to see the books? Go look at them. Examine them. I don't care. You want to see this room? I see that. When an inspector comes, I open the doors. I say, what closet do you want to look in? In fact, the last time I did it, the guy said, stop it. Because everything I was going, you want to see in that corner? You want to look over there? Let's open this door and take a look. Finally, it was like, all right, you're hiding nothing. Let me get out of here. Why? I have nothing to hide. You see something we're not doing? Tell us. There's nothing to hide. See, we're human. I guarantee you this. There's probably something we're doing wrong. But it's not like we're hiding it. It's like if we're doing it wrong, tell us we're doing it wrong. Tell us why we're doing it wrong. Maybe we just don't see it. Do you realize that if you have an attitude like that with an inspector, the inspector doesn't even want to be there? Because he knows. I'm not going to find anything. You guys aren't intentional about this stupidity stuff. No, but I don't want you to go. I would tell him, I don't want you to go. I want you to inspect everything. And he's going, I don't need to. No, but I want you to. Then I don't need to. One year he didn't come at all. Why? Because I told him. I said, why don't you come and train our people? That way they're trained right. He goes, no one's ever asked me to do that. I just did. So why don't you come and train him? So he did. Came and trained our kitchen staff. The next year he didn't even come to inspect. He said, why am I wasting my time? You know why? Open book, man. We'll show you everything. And when somebody says, and they really know what they're talking about, when somebody comes to you and says, boy, this is not right, you know what you do? You go, it isn't? Okay, I got to change that. If they know what they're talking about. And that's healthy. See, that's when you start allowing people in your life to actually make a difference in your life. Because otherwise what we do is we just exclude people. We don't want to hear their story. It's not that you're going to agree with everybody. You're not going to agree with everybody, but there's a lot of things you don't need to agree with. Let's say some of you go to a college and the college has rules, here's how you live, and you go, I disagree with those. So what? Live by the rules. You're going to the college. If you don't want to live by the rules, don't go to the college. Go work at McDonald's and see what their rules are. Go, I don't want any rules. Well, then go buy an island and live on it. The truth of the matter is, there's things out there that you need to listen to. You don't have to agree with it. You don't have to endorse it. You need to listen to it. Because most of the time, it doesn't matter. I was talking, again, to some of you about some laws that are in place that really are stupid laws, I think. But it doesn't matter. We still got to abide by them. Why? Because we have to. Yeah, but even if you think they're dumb, you do? Yep, you do. Now, if they're immoral, that's another thing. In other words, if they're against the Bible, that's another thing. But if they're not, then I have no authority, and I believe under God I need to submit to the authorities over me if it's a matter like that. Say, well, that, you know, can get into a lot of things. It could. It could get into, like, how you drive, the speed limit. It could get into, and I think it should. Why? Because we're told that we need to abide by the laws that are given to us. And if they aren't against God, but, you know, the only reason you don't want to do that is because you don't want to do that. You know, you want to be about you. And every chance you get to practice not being about you will help you be a healthier you. And every time you practice just being about you, you are going to be a less healthy you. And the only way you're going to know that is if you have other people with you that are close enough to see who you are and close enough to examine you and close enough to ask you the hard questions. That's why you have a roommate. Instead of a guy living alone, he finds another guy and says, hey, why don't you stay here with me? And then we can hold each other accountable because we're going to see each other every night. We're going to see what movies each other's watching. We're going to see if you do that stupid Pokemon game. We're going to see that. And we can get on each other's case and we correct it. And you go, yeah, well, I don't want that. That's not freedom. Well, then you don't understand freedom. You do know that freedom always has parameters. It's not, freedom isn't do whatever you want, whenever you want, however you want. Freedom has parameters around it. You don't walk into Walmart and just take things off the shelf and walk out. No, you got to buy things. Exactly. That's the law. Why is it there? So that we can have Walmart. So that we have the freedom to walk in and buy things. If you abuse it, we have no freedom anymore. There are always parameters within freedom. There's no such thing as no parameters. And if you think that way, you're in trouble. And friends help you keep the parameters because we get too close to things emotionally. We get too close to things and we can't see what they really are anymore. And somebody that's not as close can say, that's not why how it is. I often wonder why people come and talk to me about life. I'm not much of a counselor. I just say things the way I think they are. But I realize one of the reasons is because I get to look at it from a different distance than they are. I get to look at it from a different angle than they have. And so they come and they say something and I go, well, that stinks. And they just look at you like, none of my friends would say that. Well, I'm not your friend. I'm somebody you met and asked to talk to you, and here you are. I could be your friend, I guess, but that stinks what you just said. So, and then let's talk about it. So we talk about it. I'm thinking, well, why aren't your friends telling you that? Well, because they're not really a cord that's braided. They're just people, acquaintances. You're really more bonded to yourself and your own opinions and your own ideas than you are to God and to anyone else. And the reason you know that, how you know that, is because you would use people, but you don't really die to yourself for people. And even if you die to yourself for somebody, you do it for yourself so that they think more of you, so it's not really for them anyway. So you end up living your whole life really just about you. And when you end up living your whole life just about you, you're the only one that matters, so you're pretty lonely. It's a really terrible cycle to be in when that happens. And though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. Make sure you have relationships with people who will hold you accountable, not with those you can control. And make sure you have friends, and I would suggest you all try and find that younger person, that older person, and make sure you're in that kind of relationship. And see if it doesn't help you in your journey. Father, again, thank you for your word. Thank you for these words in Ecclesiastes. I pray your Spirit will speak to our hearts and convict us. In Jesus' name.